To then item 18, we have a couple folks for open public input. Steve and Robert.
Directors, Commissioner. My name is Steve Shanewise. I'm a resident in Olympia, Washington. And I'm here today to address corn pond hunting. This is the shooting of waterfowl over unharvested grain fields that are artificially flooded. And I believe this item is on the agenda for your August meeting, and I have Commissioners Baker and Keeney to thank for that. My intent here today is to just refresh your memory about this issue. Shooting waterfowl over corn ponds is not hunting, it is killing. Flooded fields are so overly attractive to waterfowl, the commercial outfits that use them guarantee a limit of ducks and or geese for every hunter, every day, all season long. Indeed, nothing that is currently considered illegal baiting can improve on the success of corn pond hunting. But perhaps the bigger issue with corn pond hunting is the severe threat it represents to public waterfowl hunting, something the commission is empowered to protect. This threat comes from the potential for commercial hunting outfits to amass increasing numbers of waterfowl to their properties by offering them not just abundant, easily accessible feed, but complete safety while they are not feeding. They do this by creating sanctuary lakes where the waterfowl can rest undisturbed in complete safety while they wait to go again to feed in a corn pond. Now, because wintering waterfowl naturally move to wherever there is the most feed with the best safety, birds will just keep accumulating over the years in ever-increasing numbers on the sanctuary lakes of the commercial outfits. And the point is, many, if not most, of these waterfowl will be ones relocating from public lands. If corn pond hunting isn't declared illegal baiting, 10 years from now, 90% or more of the ducks and geese wintering in Washington will reside on the sanctuary lakes of commercial hunting outfits with corn ponds. In conclusion, federal law allows states to make rules regarding waterfowl hunting that are more restrictive than the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, but not less. Federal rules say corn pond hunting is legal, but Washington State can create laws that say it is not. To this end, I would recommend declaring that waterfowl in Washington State can only be hunted over agricultural fields that have been grown and harvested using normal agricultural techniques. This would effectively kill corn pond hunting and be an easily understood and enforceable law. Thank you for your time. I look forward to further discussion on this subject in August.
Thank you. Any questions? Yeah, Jack.
Thank you. I always appreciate well thought out presentations from the public, and that was one of them. So appreciate your attention to this. And I don't know if you were around when the commission took on the whole concept of baiting deer. It was so many people didn't even know that was going on, so that we had to effect a change. First was a surprise to a lot of folks. The other side of it was that there was a lot of opposition to changing anything with the baiting world. So, I mean, you probably know that.
Well, this will be severely fought by the commercial outfits. This is millions of dollars to them.
Yeah, but it's a great point for us to consider. And I believe it's not necessarily on the full agenda, but it's not the Wildlife Committee agenda. Right. Thank you.
Not to ask a leading question, but yes, I asked Commissioner Keeney to put it on the wildlife meeting, and the reason wasn't strictly the baiting, but I'm going to ask this question to Mr. Shanewise. At the time that we spoke about it, and we've only spoken briefly, the point was that these waterfowl would increasingly rest on these sanctuary lakes. That in itself isn't bad, but your point, I believe, and this is a question, is that you're a duck hunter and that there would be much less opportunity for everyone else.
Exactly, Commissioner. Waterfowl are known to accumulate in places where there's feed and they're safe. And they once they go there, they'll return the next year and bring more birds with them. So it's sort of every year just more and more can accumulate onto these sanctuary lakes. And you can get a million ducks sitting on a five-acre lake if nobody ever disturbs them, and they have all the feed they want in the surrounding landscape. And that's what I'm afraid is already happening. And some of these places are bragging about the fact that they're stacking up hundreds of thousands of birds on their sanctuary lakes, and they keep increasing every year. And I believe that that is evident that waterfowl are beginning to disappear from a lot of the public lands in eastern Washington within the area of where these commercial outfits are now working. And the thing is, if it isn't stopped, it's only going to increase. I mean, it's extremely successful if you're selling hunting opportunity to people. This is legal baiting. And they, again, they guarantee a limit of ducks and or geese for every hunter every day, all season long. And they fulfill that guarantee.
I do want to add, if I may, there's many sides to this story. I've hunted in this state waterfowl my entire life, and mostly in eastern Washington. And I'm very familiar with what you're talking about, but there's some different parts of it that need to be investigated. But we also have to keep in mind that the waterfowl population is increasing every year. So it's a slippery slope.
Just to kind of expand on that, I'm thinking about it. I hope perhaps you'll be able to join us as we begin this discussion at the Wildlife Committee meeting, and I think it's scheduled for our early morning August meeting, so kind Absolutely. Of keep an eye on that. But one of the things I was thinking about, I certainly, my heart is with Fair Chase.
Yes.
I'm originally from California. You know, we nearly lost the Pacific Flyway in California through agricultural practices.
Right, and all the birds stop in Washington now.
Yeah, right. And it's recovering somewhat, and it's due to the what we call the working farms concept, which touches on the kind of thing, you know, there are the hunt clubs throughout the valley now that are the same thing, but they're also providing very important migratory habitat for these birds. And so as we work through this as a commission, I think we're going to need to keep in mind, as was pointed out, I mean, these sanctuary lakes are habitat, needed habitat for migratory birds. So, you know, how are I would like you, because you think about it a lot, to help us in our discussion think about how we balance those kinds of things with Fair Chase.
Well, Commissioner, I would contend that there are plenty of places in the state of Washington where waterfowl can rest in sanctuaries. That's when they built the dams and the reservoirs on the Columbia River, that's what began to capture the mallards that used to go to California, because they could sit out on these reservoirs and then fly out to the agricultural fields that were irrigated by the water from the reservoirs, and they had plenty of feed. So instead of having a few hundred thousand mallards wintering in Washington State, through the 60s and stuff, we got up to millions of birds. That same process is now underway with these commercial hunting outfits in their sanctuary ponds. And what the birds are doing is now drawing away from the reservoirs and concentrating into these areas. And the reason that happens is that because the more birds that occur in one area, the less the chance that any one bird will get shot at. And that is it just every year, as more and more birds come, each bird gets individually safer. And that's why that happens. And having it happen on the reservoirs throughout the state where public hunting can access all that, I think that's fine. Allowing this to happen on commercial outfits that charge $500 a day to shoot ducks, I don't think that's fine. I think it's a real threat to free public hunting.
Quick question. If I understand it correctly, once birds leave a sanctuary pond that's privately owned by the commercial people, when they go to these flooded cornfields, that's where you're taking offense as well, because if that cornfield had been an agricultural field that was harvested and there was leftover corn on the ground, I mean, that's a lot of people go hunt those.
Absolutely.
But it's this draw of a flooded cornfield that the corn is left standing, so the birds will come right there.
Well, yeah, it's there's nothing that you could do that's illegal baiting that would attract birds more.
Right.
And the reason is because when you flood a shallow field of grain, the big thing to the ducks, they're called waterfowl because they like water. And when they can sit on water and feed, they feel perfectly safe. It's not the same to go out in a field when you're standing on the ground. Sitting on water and eating that grain, it's the safest feeling they can get. And that's currently, field hunting is pretty much confined to mallards, and sometimes widgeon and pintail will kick in there. But with corn pond hunting, everything can go there because they're feeding on water, and there's all the food they can possibly want. And when they're done feeding, they get to go back and sit on a pond where nobody bothers them. And the way they work the corn ponds is they don't hunt them every day. They let them build up for 2 or 3 days and really get the birds habituated to it. Then they roll out a few dozen guys, and they just sit there. And they literally, sometimes they will shoot at birds that will fly off a few hundred yards and turn around and come right back because they don't all get shot at, and there's plenty of feed for them to eat. So it's just, it's extremely over-attractive. If you threw out bags of grain on the ground, it would not attract the birds the same way a flooded standing field will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is an area that some people identify as Sam, fish people. I'm kind of a duck person. Little known to some, but I've spent a lot of time in the duck world, and both research and as a taker.
Harvesting.
Harvester. And I've seen when we used to ban in for Environment Canada, Canadian Wildlife Service, when we were banding, you throw out, we always use cracked corn, as you know, in the confined traps, because it pulls them right in, you know. And I've seen in upper Midwest areas where you have little kettle lakes, and somebody will go throw a couple bags of cracked corn out. The next morning, there's not room for one more duck on that pond, you know.
And that's the thing with the grain. It's exactly the same process, and, but because it's not manipulated physically, it's legal.
Right. And in some upper Midwest states, they do manage, and they manage by species. They manage for mallards, you know, popular birds, but they do raise corn, they flood it, and then they have zones, and that's, it's a lottery system, but you go into it. That's state managed, but you're spot on. There is a difference between the farmer that goes out, cuts the corn, and there's corn sitting there. You go out and you hunt the field versus when you flood that field, it's night and day. So
and flood it for commercial purposes.
Yeah,
these people are not, they're in it.
Well, yeah, I don't think they're going to do it for themselves.
Right, they're in it for the money.
And so I think your presence would be obviously well welcomed there.
Thank you.
But that being said, we've got one side of the story. Is there any way that we can get some information so we can, because I haven't a clue what I understand what you're talking about, I get the concept, but before I'm going to start making any decisions, I got to get both sides of the story. I'm sorry, I just do.
No,
And so how do I go about getting that information? Can you give us some information of these outfits so we can go check them out and see what's going on?
Well, Commissioner, I think it would be more appropriate for you to contact those people rather than me.
No, but who are those people? I have no idea who those people are.
I can help you, Jim.
They advertise in the hunting pamphlet. I provided Commissioner Baker with examples from Eagle Lakes.
Okay, all I want to do is find out who those people are so I can track.
And there are degrees within, like just like in the baiting world, there was a dump trucks, you know, coming out. So there's degrees in all of this too. So
I think the thing, the trick in dealing with this, if you're going to declare it illegal, is to just make it that you can only hunt waterfowl over agricultural fields that have been grown and harvested in a natural manner. That makes it simple to understand. And I believe that there should be exemptions for that on state lands where they grow grain and leave it standing. I don't have any problem with that, but I don't think you should be flooding it, even on public lands.
Well, I disagree. I disagree with you.
What we'll do is we've got to cut this off because we've got so much to do today. Staff has already done the work in looking at the law and the other states and sort of what the issue is. Well, I will provide what I have to every commissioner, And then we should, the first thing we should do is find out, get a staff briefing on this at the Wildlife Committee.
And there again, do our homework, but I don't know who they, those people are.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll move back to a different kind of ponds. So, I woke up at 3 this morning. I couldn't get back to sleep. And I decided, I told my wife I was going to come up here again. She said, I'm insane. You better not have a car wreck. So here I am anyway. I'm not going to dwell on yesterday's decision. When I made that proposal, I just made sure that I had good science behind it, that staff would confirm the points I was making, and that I didn't expect to get the fishery, but I wanted to hear what people said. But what I am frustrated in is the fact that we are businesses. We get 3 minutes to talk. We have sports fishermen who may not even take advantage of the policy. They get just as much time. We can't defend our businesses in this format. It just doesn't work. It's not possible for us to do that. It ever since they merged the commissions, we had recreational priority established in Puget Sound for pinks, coho, sockeye, and chinook. How's that working for you in Puget Sound by getting rid of us down there? We've had changes in the commercial harvest for crab, changes in spot prawn harvest, always going to the recreational side. The Grays Harbor commercial fishery is dead because of that policy. Willapaw has a little glimmer of life because you've modified the original. We're dying on the Columbia. You know, I understand that you don't want to rush to a decision, but that should have been the call in January of last year when you had a chance to hold and see, because you knew the policy wasn't working. Now, so you wait. This is another summer season that's going away. We won't have a chance again till next summer, if we even have a fishery anymore. You know, we're trying to run our, we're trying to hold on to markets, we're trying to run businesses, and this, there's no industry that's getting killed by this Fish and Wildlife Commission, like the commercial fishing industry. You said the hardest other decision you've had to make was the wolf controversy. The wolf controversy is like the pinniped controversy. You aren't telling the ranchers that they can't raise cattle or that they can't harvest their cattle. It's dealing with a predator that's impacting their ability to do that. That's what the pinnipeds are doing to us. In our case, you're taking away our harvest opportunity on public food fish that the public has their only access to it if they don't fish through us. And over 90% of the public doesn't fish. This is not a process that works. I hear these people talking yesterday. It's been 231 days since Kitzhaber made this proposal. I don't care what Heath says about how much he's thought about it. I've thought about it, written about it, spoken about it, talked about it, attended meetings about it every day for those 231 days. And I was involved in it before then. You don't understand the burden this is creating. And in my case, I'm fortunate. I am not dependent on this for my entire income. I'm doing it because I'm stubborn, and I can't stand to see us run out of business, and we're losing young fishermen in the region and in the fishery because they don't see any future on it. We can't get a person on the Pacific Fishery Management Council to take over for Greg Johnson because we don't have a young person who sees any point in spending his time on it anymore. I mean, this is a bigger deal than any of you can imagine, or than most of you can imagine, I mean. And Commissioner Baker, I appreciated your comment yesterday about your perception of gill nets since you came on the commission. But we fight that with everybody who comes on the commission who doesn't have a background. It's starting from zero again, trying to explain our fishery. And I'm an engineer by training. Facts, science, data are what matter to me. And I've tried to put that into every letter, everything I've given with you. I tried to back it up with staff data and provide the best stuff. And then I come into these meetings and I hear people like Harry Barber just blow up information that isn't at all like it was said. I hear Heath talking about how the tack determination of a lower steelhead handle for us mortality was part of a using science or reports that didn't have any application. I can't wait to tell the TAC committee next week what he said about that. The fact that he ignored the fact that it not only went through TAC, it went through the larger committee, it went through NIMFS, it had a variety of places that was checked before that value was approved. Liz talking about her phone blowing up, I mean, I would like to have had somebody ask to see your phone and just see how much your phone was blowing up. Those smarmy comments, they just don't fit. Randy Woolsey talking about how it's been a tough 2 or 4 years. 4 years ago, we had a record Chinook return on the Columbia. 3 years ago, we had a record summer Chinook return on the Columbia. We had huge sockeye runs. 2 years ago, we still had viable fisheries. They're complaining about their performance through some of the best runs we've ever had on the Columbia. And we're losing our opportunity to fish at all. I had 4 deliveries last year. 4. And they were all in within a month's time. It's not because there aren't harvestable fish. You haven't heard it yet, but this year on the spring Chinook fishery, the catch balance was only between 60 and 70% of the catch balance was used. That's 3,000 hatchery fish that didn't get caught, that could have been caught at least partially by our fishery. The impacts didn't get used. The conservation in the Columbia River is not how many impacts we use or how many the recreational guys use on these endangered stocks. The conservation is in the numbers that the government sets. That's where the conservation is. If we use 1.4% without us and 1.7% with us, that's insignificant on the out of the 15 or 16% that's available overall for the tribes and us. You know, I mean, it's just unreasonable to be treating us this way. We have no opportunity to present our fishery and the picture of how it really works, the people that we serve. You're talking about marketing. The marketing, you should be marketing to consumers who want to have local fish. You know, how many people cook at home now that didn't used to cook at home? How many people eat in restaurants? We serve far more tourists come to Washington and want to eat local salmon than come to Washington to sport fish. I mean, there's no comparison if you look at the data. You're leaving out the public that owns the resource. No tribal spring Chinook harvest for 2 years now because the run wasn't big enough. So the public that pays for all those hatcheries from the Willamette to Cowlitz to up into the Snake in the Upper Columbia, that the public pays for those hatcheries. They are getting no benefit for those unless they go sport fishing. And that's the majority of the population. You're leaving out the people who are paying for this. And we are the conduit to get some of those fish to those people. I could go on. I know I took more than 3 minutes. I appreciate the fact you didn't beat me out. But I could go on all day about this. You know, it's just so. Yesterday you said, HSRG, it's not working. It's time to do something different. That's a lot bigger deal than the policy. I mean, that covers hatchery throughout the state. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm passionate about it because. Yeah, I know, and I really do appreciate that.
Thank you, Robert. I was awake at 3 o'clock in the morning too, and had I known, we could have commiserated.
I thought about calling you to ask if I should come up today.
But I want to thank you for kind of coming to the commission several weeks ago, months ago. And we have been talking about this issue. I don't want to pick fights with my other commissioners, this was not a new issue, and it was, in my view, thoroughly vetted. The votes came out the way they came out.
I understand
That's the way it goes. But a silver lining, I think, for you and other folks is that we are in the midst of a thorough review of the Columbia River policy. And the intent of the review is not just simply to review for review's sake. The review is two-part. See what's working and what's not working, and then fix it. And so I would... And I spoke to you and others. I know it's discouraging. I would be discouraged if I were you. But I would ask that you continue to come, participate, hear, give your side of the story, and hopefully we can make it better. That's So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'll move on down. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and let me also say thanks to you for testifying and being so persistent on this. I know you're acting on behalf of a lot bigger circle of people than just yourself, and that's for a very good purpose. The essence of your testimony, or at least the beginning in particular, had to do with the process being not as satisfying as it could be. So we've got a three-minute time frame here for questions. There's always an opportunity for an exchange because of the small number of people. This morning, we've been able to do a little bit of that for the two, but a lot of times it's a room full of people, so that represents some difficulty. The committee meetings are open now, and so just as it's going to be beneficial for on this last issue of the duck hunting and the corn and the rest of it to dig into some stuff, and I guess it's up to the chair of the Wildlife Committee on whether or not they want to offer public interaction at that time, but at least the public is there. Anyway, as a process, there's that. We've got advisory bodies. A lot of times the commissioners aren't there. So do you have a recommendation for a different process that might satisfy that without getting into could you write down a recommendations for a change in process that you think might be a little fairer for, or not fair isn't the right word here. It's because what we have is fair to everybody.
More equitable.
But, well, I think it's equitable to both sides. It's just a matter of what you're saying is the process doesn't allow the commissioners at the front table to get the depth of understanding that you think we should have.
Don sort of brought up what I was going to say. Robert, I have total respect for you and your views and appreciate how cordial you are when you come with your ideas. I think that's very, very important. But I do think that I think Don brought it up at a less formal setting, the continued participation by you folks with the Fish Committee, I think is helpful to all of us. We have a little more time to sort out some of the issues and better understand each other's views, and I would welcome that, and I hope you and your colleagues would.
Yeah,
I'll second that. Because the 3 minutes that Don said, that is the process. I mean, you know, because you know how that works when this room is full, and everybody has an equal right, but in these other formats, like the open committee, I encourage you to do that. And you always do bring an honest and a polite and a well-positioned presence here. So,
mine's a more personal note, Robert. I appreciate what you were saying about you bring the science and a very rational approach. And you know, coming on to the commission a few years ago with fish as just a deep, dark, blank hole for me. You've been part of my education, and I appreciate your testimony. You contrasted it with some of the other testimony that we hear. I put a lot of stock in what you say, how you've been part of my education, and I just want to thank you for it and, yes, encourage you to continue to be involved.
Robert, believe it or not, I look forward to your presence. Your presentations are always well thought out and very concise and understandable, and they have a lot of influence. On the desktop of my laptop is the letter that you submitted prior to your presentation and prior to the conference call that we had. So I pay attention to what you say because I see value. And I know that what you provide us is good information and represents your constituents very well. And I congratulate you on that. And as I say, I seriously do listen and read what you provide us. And I thank you for your efforts in that.
This is like you're getting it all from us today. I hadn't been on the commission very long when I met with you and several of your compadres, and it changed completely how I viewed this issue. So I would back up what Commissioner Thornburg said, is please don't give up. I'm off the commission in another month, and you cannot lose faith, because you have to keep people informed on this commission. Something you said today, you know, hit me different than I'd ever heard it before. In these sessions where you have 3 minutes, there might be 20 people representing rec fishing and three representing commercial, and it's so easy for a group like this to kind of, well, I heard 20 people say they wanted it this way and three say this way, but you're not only representing the 30 or 40 or 50 commercial fishermen. What you're saying is representing the millions of plates of food that are going out.
That's absolutely right.
And that really struck a note with me, and I do not believe our legislature created this board to ever do away with commercial fishing. In fact, they were exactly opposite of that. And to hear you say it's getting close to where there's, you know, people not entering into the business, there's people checking out, and it seems to be on the backs of you that we're trying to say we're conserving the fish, it really bothers me. And I would even encourage you to take up a legislative process, whatever that is for you and your folks, because if you're not getting satisfaction here, there's got to be a way to make people understand what you're saying. And I thank you again for all the time you put in, and you've always done a great job of explaining yourself.
I've been going through that funeral process for 6 years. I mean, that's the...
Well, I was also up at 3 o'clock this morning, refiguring what I said yesterday, and thinking about just how much more eloquent I could have been if I'd have just wordsmithed a little bit. But I want to say two things. First off, there is a legislative interest in this issue already, but this is our job to solve. But if Liz's phone was going off with her supporters, mine was going off with legislators. I mean, and this is 10 minutes after this decision. So people are watching us, and we know that. The one thing that, well, two things, real quick. You've done more in 3-minute increments. Maybe you're outnumbered with this ongoing fight, but you've done more in 3-minute increments to educate those of us who don't have a background in fish than anyone else. So, except, well, yeah, and then anyone else on the technicalities of it. So, whether you come to fish committee meetings, whether we do some sort of summit, or whether you keep going on, I hope that you do all of those. And then the next thing is, I don't want to restate what I said yesterday, but what I've heard since I've been on the commission is that this was a huge deal, hours and months and years in the making, this policy. And, you know, thousands of people's input. Again, my first meeting, there was hundreds of people there. And this is a policy that we have under review now, serious review. So what it came down to for me, and really, I really only was one of five, so I wasn't the deciding vote. I want to point out there was five of us. What it came down to me is that taking the right turn while this policy is under review for such a big part of it isn't adaptive management. That's not what I think of as adaptive management. I think that that's basically, you know, throwing away the policy. What I want to make sure that everyone knows is that my mind is really open, and I have big concerns about allocating a commercial fishery 20% and then not having them have any way to actually exercise that fishery. So that's all it was for me. And I know that we feel your pain, and I know that we don't feel it directly because I don't live there and that's not how I make my living, but you guys do a very good job of representing the commercial fishery, not just the economics, but the whole cultural part of it. And so I want to thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Holzmiller knows my position. So. I had one question from Commissioner McIsaac. I know. What I think ought to happen, frankly, the only way we can deal with this and keep the science focused is to have commercial and recreational panels at that combined meeting in November so that we can we can push the science, because otherwise they say one thing, we say something else, and it doesn't get resolved. And you've heard some of these same things over and over again. And that's what killed us in 2012, was the fact that there were four of us, and there were six commissioners and four recreational people who, in general, had the other perspective. And we had to try to educate everybody. And we never get a fair, and we're the only businesses that get consistently hammered in the commission process. That's my complaint about the 3 minutes, is that we're trying to represent our businesses and the people that we supply, not just whether or not I can go fishing three times or four times in a year. And the commission, the policy added very few days. If you look at the work that Oregon did, some years one day to the recreational fishery. So, yeah. And I do thank you so much for the feedback and for the well, you know, I know, and the extra time. I appreciate all of that. Thank you.
And I'll end it by saying there are people. You're a frequent participant in this whole process here. There are other frequent participants that we don't share the love for as much. So, yeah. This united words of praise and love. So.
The angry Robert that you see here, this isn't my typical persona. You know, I'm generally a very compromising person. But I reached the end of my rope on this topic. And I'm mad about it. I'm passionate about it. I'm not changing the way I approach it. But I'm not going to give up. They're going to have to carry me out one way or the other.
We will never look at you as angry Robert.
Thank you.